You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, to present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 50. Today we're talking about hiring superstars and scaling with Paul Kirchhoff. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Merrill. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. Superstars and A-players are ultimately the key of gaining more time in your life and more profit in your business. Too many people focus on hiring people instead of the best talent they can afford and get. So for everyone who's extremely busy and just wants to download the process and start scaling their team with A-players, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/50050.
So today we're talking about scaling and hiring superstars. Great companies, large and small, rise and fall because of their talent. The more high performers you have in your team, the more successful your organization will be. Of course, it's easier said than done, and research shows that only about 25% of all new hires turn out to be top performers. Now, scaling a business successfully doesn't just come down to staff. We pay attention to org charts, processes, culture, sales and marketing, and the list goes on. But all of these things are just a byproduct of having the right people. So if you're a business owner or a CEO looking to get more time back, step out of your company or sell your company, you'll need superstars, specifically in your management team, to pull this off. So pay attention to today's guest because he's been through it all. I'm super pumped for this one, Grant. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, mate, look, I could not agree more. Look, when I recall starting my very first business, it was all about hiring the cheapest talent to get a repetitive job done, building processes for them to follow where it was so granular that ultimately they did not need to think. And it was ultimately just about getting people for less so that we can grow the profit margin. Fast forward many, many, many years, and now I spend more of my valuable time on strategies on where my team will be in the next 3 to 5 years, ensuring that the role I'm hiring for now is crucial to the company across that length, spending just as much time on getting the best applicants as we do on finding clients, as well as investing more of my time than ever on interviewing the top candidates to ensure that they're exactly what the company needs. It is through these types of changes in my mindset and business that's enabled us to ultimately build a business that is perceived to be at the top of its industry for quality, consistently delivers well above service level agreements, innovate consistently without me needing to get too involved, as well as growing beyond just being a body shop and actually becoming a strategic center. So there's really merit as to why the best entrepreneurs in the world focus more time on networking and bringing on the best staff, because they are a way that they can ensure that they unlock the benefits and keys in their business.
Love it. So today we've got Paul Kirchhoff on the show. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm awesome, mate. Paul and I met at a networking event last year in the Dominican Republic. He got on stage and told a very similar story to mine where he scaled his company and ultimately got out of the day-to-day. He's built two marketing software companies. He founded and was the CEO of SalesAmp, an online lead generation and marketing company. He now heads Epix Worldwide, a social business network for entrepreneurs who want to adventure the planet and build powerful relationships with other talented, like-minded individuals. Without a doubt, the most interesting man on my Facebook feed, a regular James Bond type, if you will. In the last few months, I've seen Paul flying in fighter jets at the UN, at Dallas Cowboy Stadium doing private tours, scaling Everest, just to name a few. He is a large source of inspiration to entrepreneurs all over the world. It's an absolute pleasure having you on, Paul. So tell me how you got into scaling and realizing you needed the right people to make this all happen.
Well, first of all, that's a great intro, and I greatly appreciate it. It makes me sound like I'd like to meet the person myself. So, but you know, the thing is that I've been, you know, through everything, much like you guys. I'm in building companies from scratch. There's some entrepreneurs that have the fortitude and the skill set to raise money, and then there's others of us that bootstrap everything, where, you know, any small misstep can kill your business. But if you're fortunate enough to kind of fight through that stuff, and fight is definitely the right word, I think you get to a point where you're seeing some success. And then there's a lot of other, barriers or steps that must be navigated. One of them is how you get out of being the show for your company so that other people can take over. And then later on, there's another one, which is, you know, you're now managing a lot of people and you have to hire great talent that you can outsource your decision making to in order for you to take the company higher. So I think it's, you know, I'll leave it a little bit up to you in terms of which of those two you want to talk about. They're very different, and one usually comes after the other.
Right. So let's say you sit in your company. I'm not sure how big you grew it or how big you grew it from. Let's say you sit in your company and you realize, look, we've really got to scale this company. What was that aha moment when you're just like, you know what? I'm doing too much myself. This is not scalable. I can't go adventure the world and do these things I love. Something's got to change. What was that little tipping point for you?
Well, I think, you know, one of them for sure is your own bandwidth, right? I mean, even entrepreneurs that love the game like I do, I couldn't stop working if I wanted to. But at some point you start to work, you know, yourself into where your bandwidth won't scale. And so one of the aha moments for me was that, you know, we were growing and I was hiring people quickly in order to not stress out the rest of the employee base. I mean, obviously, if you keep getting sales and your employees have to handle it, you know, eventually it's like a balloon that gets filled with water. And if you don't let some of the water out by adding another person, you know, you're going to kill your company from the inside. So at some point, though, even if you navigate those very careful steps financially, you get to the point where you are managing 17 people. Now, in my case, you know, some of the cutting edge folks were also young and inexperienced. Some of that was because I only had so much money and I could only afford to get certain levels of experience in the company as it was growing. But at some point, you know, you have the job of sales, first and foremost, for sure, in the early days as an entrepreneur. But you also have the burden of training younger people, in my case, right? So it's like, you know, people that raise money, they can hire great people right away. When you're bootstrapping something and you only have so much money, you know, you're basically hiring the best available, or in some cases, the least worst, before your entire company gets stressed out from too much work. So it's a very careful balance that you get there. But I think at some point I got to the point where, you know, I was managing 17 people, I'm working 25 hours a day. And I just realized that, like, something has to change. And that change for me at that point, at that milestone, was I had to figure out how to put systems and processes in place that these guys could follow, where my knowledge was basically guardrailing their decision-making process, right? So if you had good talent, you put them in there and you let them fly within a system. The problem is that, as talented as I felt I was at the time as a CEO who was a smart guy and, you know, had success in his life, the reality is you're not great at everything, right? You may not be great at providing a vision and building camaraderie. You may not be great at financial management. And so I hit this moment where I was like, man, like, how in the world do I get over this? And what I decided is that I basically was not great at creating systems. And even in some of these different areas, I just wasn't as good as I should be. And I had two choices. I could either continue to fight my way through it, being a smart person that would probably figure it out, or I could just flat out adopt a best-in-class system and then use my horsepower to implement a system to run the business, and then eventually a system to hire great people. So I'll stop there and see if you want to take it in a different direction. But that's basically, you know, the aha moment was me on top of 17 people with no org chart and some hires that weren't great because I needed them quickly. And I got, in that case, the least worst that was available at the time.
Does it sound familiar, Grant? I think he's preaching to the choir here, right?
You are preaching to the choir.
So I'm thinking that after this session, every business owner will be able to go into the office tomorrow and put some steps in place to either get themselves out of their business or to be able to scale their business effectively based on your framework, right?
Well, here's the deal. I think by the time we're done, there will be two resources that could change the trajectory of their business, because I really believe, especially in services business, but quite frankly, there's a lot to do on things like e-commerce business and other ones too. I mean, every entrepreneur that bootstraps their business that has any amount of early success is going to hit a wall. And the wall is you have hired people quickly. You probably weren't great at who you hired, and you probably also don't have systems to run the business. Like, think about an operating system that it's telling you as a CEO, don't guess, do this, and do this, and your business is going to run more smoothly. Well, the fact is, you know, a lot of us are just smart people that work hard, and we kind of figure out what we figure out. But the framework that I'll share with you, which I swear this is gold from 20 years of being an entrepreneur, is there were two things that I adopted, and I happened to run into them, and I decided that instead of picking and choosing and trying to figure out whether I can, you know, skirt past it, I just flat out got everybody in a room and said, we're going to adopt this as if we're like the poster child for these frameworks. One of them was a book called Traction. It's written by a guy named Gino Wickman, and the best way for me to describe it is as a CEO, it tells you how to run your meetings, which meeting you have, exactly what the agenda is, and all the ways to look at the data that you need to run your business and make decisions and the ones that you don't. And we can go into this a little bit deeper if you'd like. But that was an operating system for running a business that is growing, right? The other one, which we talked a little about in the pregame here, is top grading. Top grading is an HR focus that is a way of interviewing and building a pipeline of candidates so that there's no way to do anything other than to barf out A players for every single position that you're interviewing for. And the other part of it is obviously how every year, you know, you have a duty as a CEO to remove the bottom 10% of performers so that this pipeline that's dropping A players in your backyard gets to take over. And then over time, you're upgrading your talent and your capability. And, you know, I can speak about either one of these things. I mean, the traction piece was such that I didn't know how to run a growing business. I was in new territory and, you know, without a lot of capital, because you're deploying it to grow, you know, it was very helpful to have a blueprint to just flat out adopt. It was humongous in its empowerment of others in training me to run a smooth running company. Secondly, with top grading, I realized that after several years, now this is several years later, asking, you know, me focused on 17 people, I just realized that one day that, man, you know, I'm really not that great at interviewing. And the reason why is because when I get in there, I'm looking for like the spark and the passion and the innovation, and not necessarily can they actually do the job and are they going to be likable people. And the other people were coming in there looking for other things. So I finally got everybody in the room and I just said, you know, part of the reason we have a bunch of B players in here and even some Cs, maybe even a couple Ds, is because we don't know what the hell we're doing when we interview these people. Clearly, it's our fault, right? But instead of blaming people, you blame the system. And our system was everybody get in there and just figure out whether we're going to like this person, which is stupid. So top grading was a very specific methodology of how many interviews, exactly who asks what, who's in the interview, and what references you check and how. And so we got everybody in the room and we just said, you know what, let's stop guessing. We're not that good. Let's just adopt a best practices system that's been proven on 5,000 companies or whatever, and let's just adopt it. Like nobody, there is no way to get creative on this system. We're just going to adopt it, and we did. And so, therefore, after a while, when we were continuing to grow, we were starting to get better and better talent because it was coming through a system that we didn't guess on. And I think that a lot of times as entrepreneurs, especially when you're seeing a little bit of success, you know, we all sit there and it just feels good, right? You got some money in your pocket, you know, you're taking the hill. But the reality is that your entire company will break if you don't get good talent coming in one way and you don't have a good system to run the business that makes you not the show. It's the systems that run the show and the people within the systems. So I'll take a breather.
Yeah, I think a really interesting point to that is some people will take a book like a top grading and they'll try and put their own spin on it and get a little bit of creative license in there, and then they lose the essence of what it's actually trying to achieve. Another thing we've probably all been through is rapid growth, where we've had to go out and hire 20 people straight away. And I'm in LA this week and I'm doing some consulting. And if I move to LA, it's going to take me a couple of years to find a good base of friends. If I come out and try and find 20 good friends in the first 2 weeks, you know, I'm going to find a couple of friends that are going to be friends for life. The majority of people are going to be so Facebook friends, and a couple of them are going to be absolute scumbags. So if I had a system in place to be able to filter through and find those friends a lot quicker, that's what we're trying to do in the recruitment process, isn't it? Because sometimes it's just bums on seats and then you just deal with the rest later on. And that's what inhibits our growth and breaks down the company and the scalability of it ultimately, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you just sparked a memory of mine. Hiring good people is very similar to sales, right? It's you have to build a pipeline. That alone requires marketing and exposure and, you know, writing interesting copy so that your company is different than whoever you're competing with. And then of course you have the funnel, and the funnel is where top grading just kind of removes anybody's discretion and puts a system in place that you know, that you can scale. But I think that, you know, a funny thing about growing and scaling with people is that, you know, it's very difficult to figure out how to scale to get the resumes coming in the first place. So for example, there's stages that I saw, you know, that we went through as a young company and getting older. And the first step is, you know, you don't have the money for a part-time recruiter or a full-time HR person in some cases, right? And then all of a sudden, at some point, you have enough money and enough size where you need an HR person, but you hope that they can also recruit and, you know, maybe a little bit of a budget to drop some stuff on Craigslist and other places like that. And then eventually, when you start needing more volume, you start to realize that in order to scale that function, you need to separate possibly HR and recruiting. And then the recruiting person very quickly runs out of their own network, right? The expanse of it. So then you start giving them better tools, right? You maybe give them a huge monster login, or you give them LinkedIn's, you know, enterprise tool. So now you're maxing out their ability. But even that in some cases starts to peter out, which means that you have to figure out how to further scale. And now you're talking about recruiters, and recruiters have a very heavy price, but it is nothing compared to getting the right player. And I just remember all of those steps just in terms of generating the resume flow that you need if you're really scaling and growing fast, you know. But again, you can imagine that even if you navigated those paths, which is always a financial thing because, you know, you're not sitting on a ton of money, you're deploying it, you kind of slowly walk up the lead generation side of recruiting. You cannot afford to send those people into a funnel that is, you know, a discretionary interview system, right? Which is why that top grading piece is so important. But those two things in combination is how you scale, you know, getting good people, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And I think looking at that, there's a gentleman called Vern Harnish who wrote Scaling Up as well, which is version two of Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. I went and saw him in Sydney actually last year. And basically they really evangelize this concept of applying the same marketing tactics to marketing your product or service as you do to hiring really good people. So I think there's complete merit in that. So what I want to do is I want to look at, I know that we've talked about a lot of different sort of parts of business, such as traction through Gene Wickman, which is an entire sort of operational handbook for CEOs, as well as top grading and things. I think that a lot of businesses really sort of struggle with this concept of the journey that they are in and finding the best talent. And I think you touched on something awesome there, Paul, where you were talking about you have to hire the best people for what you have available or the resources you have available, right? Whether that is cost, so hiring people at a lowest price or the least worst out of a bunch, or also finding the best people that are available right now. So if you know that you need a position in 6 months, it's great, you got 6 months to go and find it. But if you're struggling right now and the balloon's about to burst, you have to just find the best person that is available right now to put into your business rather than waiting those 6 months. Outside of all of those considerations, where I think anyone who's listening can understand the position they're in right now and be able to slot themselves in, and looking and talking about top grading, I think it's something that people talk about but don't actually implement too well because they've never seen it in action. Can you take us through at quite a high level the way that you've adopted top grading? Because I know top grading, but I think it was a gentleman called Brad Smart off the top of my head, I think there's a couple of ways that people implement top grading, and I think they kind of miss a couple of critical aspects to whether it's the interviewing process or anything like that. So did you want to take us through a quite a high level about how you implemented top grading and the key steps that you put through, and then we'll break it down in a little bit more detail later?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak at a very high level. I mean, after a while, you know, I wasn't involved in the interviewing process because luckily we got big enough to where other people that were talented that came through that process, you know, began to take it over. So there's probably a little bit of granularity that I may not remember or be able to get to. But one thing I wanted to say really quick, because I think it's important, especially for entrepreneurs that are in the earlier stage, it's very, very difficult to navigate, you know, applying top grading to a situation where you are growing and you're under pressure in order to accommodate the revenue that you just sold. Because the problem is that I got into a situation where we were hiring full-time employees very quickly without the proper vetting, right? You know, I mean, I'm sure in some cases we probably barely called for their references, if at all, because we needed to, they did well from a likability in the interview process and we just hired them. And one of the things that I've learned is that we rewrote our employment contracts to be very specific that the first 90 days was also a test. Right? It was a test and a probationary period to make sure that they performed and that we liked them. And one of the things that I would say to somebody in hindsight, if you're in the younger stages and you're seeing some success and you need to hire quickly, is that in some cases, yes, you should take the time to generate a bunch of resumes, which is sometimes tough given capital constraints. Yes, you should try to push them through something like top grading and be very patient to find the A player. But the reality of battle is that sometimes you don't have time. So if I were back in those days as a younger version of me, what I would be doing is I would have hired quickly to the best of my ability, but I would have said in there that no matter what, this is a 90-day probationary period, right? We have to make sure you can perform. And then what you do is you can't just put that in a document and have them sign it. You have to remind them with check-ins after they've been hired, but at least it gives you an out. So for example, you could pull the trigger quickly, but still be running people, you know, keeping the position open and running through resumes through top grading process to make sure that you were getting the best player available, because you know you have 90 days for this person either to win it or not.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that.
Anyway, it's just something that I remembered having, you know, that would have helped me a lot, because I did hire quickly and I did hire a lot of B players. And, you know, the thing about B players or C players is that they pull down your A players. Why? Because your A players now have to slow down to train them or carry their weight. Or if they're not performing, it actually introduces negativity to your A players. So, you know, doing something that gives you an out is very, very important along the way.
And I think the cost of actually hiring someone who's not fit for the position is significantly greater than actually getting rid of them and putting someone else on. So if you just hold on to a bad employee, it's just going to create a huge hole in your entire organization.
Yes, exactly. You're right. And, you know, typically people that are not A players are also a little bit less emotionally stable, which means they will complain quicker about anything that they feel is unjust rather than accepting the blame themselves or responsibility. And that negative chatter can crush your culture, where otherwise it would be very positive. So, you know, there is no substitute for hiring good people. But look, you know, the reality of fist fighting entrepreneurs is sometimes you don't have time to wait, and you also don't have money to hire the best level of talent that you would like, right? So the little bit of this conversation is a very realistic view of what you can do in order to like stem the potential of risk to your company from hiring bad people.
Yeah, correct. So outside of that probationary period after we've brought people on, what were the key steps that you had sort of leading up to that, whether or not it did follow the exact sort of top grading process?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about top grading, once, you know, somebody learns it or reads the book or whatever, is that there's a series of interviews, right? I think, as a matter of fact, there are three of them, but there's also a final interview that we added to it. And the interviews are spread out with very specific questions to be asked. It's all in the book, which is probably the better place to look at it. You know, you can get it as an ebook or whatever. But thing is that one of the most important ones at the end, after everybody thought that the person would be great at doing the job, is we had a separate set of people interview them against our core values. And a lot of times, you know, companies may not even have core values, but I can't tell you how important that is, because it's kind of like what makes you you. We had one in our company that was called Evolve or Die. And Evolve or Die meant that you're either studying and learning and cutting edge on the latest set of tools that you need for a particular skill set, or we are going to get left behind. So if somebody wasn't exhibiting that, then it was very detrimental to our business model, where we're being paid to be the headlights on technology and marketing aspects for our clients. So having a separate interview just for culture fit, not just culture fit, like, are they cool and they're going to be fun to work with? It's like, tell me exactly how you have shown in your past a relentless ability to have evolve or die at the heart of what you do every single day. And we would literally go one after the other against these core values. You know, another one that we had was passionate and positive. Why? Because if anybody's not positive, they're a nightmare to work with and will cause us problems. If somebody's not passionate, they don't take prideful work in what they do, then, you know, that's a person that is probably just punching the clock. And ideally for your position and those dollars, we'd rather have somebody else available. So by setting those expectations in the interview process, that really helped us weed out people that, you know, exhibited the natural characteristics of what makes a, you know, a successful employee in our environment. And all that stuff obviously bleeds forward to your business model and how competitive your company will be. So the combination of, you know, adopting top grading specifically, plus, you know, core values interview was just a little cherry on top, you know, that we had to do. But I think the most important thing is that, you know, when you learn about top grading and you learn about the purpose of these separate interviews, the beautiful thing is that there are very specific questions that you ask. And it was great to basically remove all ambiguity and creative freedom from an interviewing process and give your people the tools to ask the questions that matter within a system that's been proven. And I think that's, you know, ultimately the way to go. And you don't skip any steps, and everybody reports the results further up the food chain. And then there's a little bit of a committee that, you know, discusses whether an offer is going to be made, which happens in some cases, employee interview that's unstructured. And then it gets to, yeah, we like this guy. Please take a look at him, Paul. And then I do an interview. And then as long as they wanted me to interview, if I think they're good, we just pull the trigger, right? It gets out of that situation where the CEO, which again, being a perfect imperfect example, is I'm interviewing for the wrong stuff, right? Not the wrong stuff, but, you know, not exactly the whole picture. So, you know, top grading helps you make sure you're interviewing for, can they do the job? Will they fit the culture?
So, mate, a common question that comes up for me is someone that needs to probably replace himself, maybe get a really good 2IC. What would be your recruitment method if you had to do that again tomorrow? Would you try and promote within? Would you bring someone from the outside in? Would you go through your personal network? Would you go poach from another company? Do you go through third-party connections or job boards? If you had to do the same thing tomorrow, just to get an absolute gun in there to know that you could travel the world and that everything was taken care of, what method would you go through?
Well, I think that you have to go through all methods, because even somebody who is from within is very important to give them an opportunity to interview, but it's also very important to tell them with very clear expectations that this is an open interview and the best person for the job based on experience and economics is going to be considered, right, for the benefit of the company. So I think it's important. You know, I wouldn't lean either way. I would ask my network, hey, here are the things that are important. I have a job description. Can anybody send me any referrals? I think it's very important, obviously, who the referral came from. I think it's important to do a little bit of recruiting, and it's important to give your employees the opportunity to interview for it. I mean, I've seen many companies kill themselves because they didn't even allow anybody from internally to interview for it. So you have to have the boldness to allow that to happen, because it's a signal to all of your employees. I think doing that is one thing. And, you know, being able to check track records. I mean, the people from inside know the system. The people from outside can bring fresh ideas. And those are things that you have to do. But there's another very important step. Even if you find somebody that has your skills and can lead the company, if you're still the financial owner of the company and have a great stake in it, the other question is, how do you measure and keep track of what's happening, especially in the early transition period where you're going to start, you know, touring the world? And I think that's where something like Traction is very helpful. There's many pieces to Traction, but one of the most powerful ones is this concept of a scorecard. And when you build a scorecard with your management team, you're building 5 to 7 metrics, which are predictive variables, right? So it's not looking backwards as how many sales did we get, right? It's looking at all the things that affect your business model that if they're not on track week to week, you may end up with a really crappy quarter. And that's very, very valuable. So for example, you would be looking at things like leads and not revenue. You'd be looking at things like collections, like day sales outstanding and not cash in the bank, right? Because if your day sales outstanding week to week are getting larger, that means it's going to take longer for you to bring cash in. So to me, like when you're gone and you're on a boat or whatever, all you need is to have them send you weekly updates with those predictive variables. And then, of course, at the end of every month, you find out what the real scorecard was. And between all of that, you could have your eyes closed and only open them for 15 minutes a day somewhere, and you'll know exactly whether your company's on track or not. And that's a very, very valuable thing.
Fantastic. Look, Grant, I know you've been scribbling away quite frantically, and we've covered a lot of different areas in this podcast today. Can you give some tips or some tricks or some framework that you've taken out of today's show that people can go into the office and implement tomorrow and start scaling their businesses effectively?
Yeah, I think we've talked about an absolute truck ton throughout this entire sort of hiring, firing, top grading, sourcing the best talent conversation. What I've done is I've broken it down into more or less a couple of similar steps to top grading with a little bit of a Paul's take on it all. So there are a couple of things in here that we touched on very slightly, but Paul, correct me in any of these parts that I might have got correct. So there's about 9 steps. So the first one, and we talked about this, was always making sure that you have a bench of applicants coming through. And I know we talked about this in regards to when people come through probation. So you always want new resumes coming in, always want to make sure that new people are being interviewed just in case you get completely flooded and you need to bring people on. But more importantly, if other people who you just brought on don't work, which means you need to walk them out the door, cut them off during their probation. Number 2 is you really need to understand why you're hiring people, or creating a bit of a job scorecard. So what is the success of why they're going to be coming on? What are they really needed for, etc.? But I think most importantly to that, it's more going to outline what your business can afford right now. So it's not, I need to hire the best of the best of the best, even though you can't afford it. It's more of a scorecard internally and what you need. Number three is the sourcing and marketing. And so we touched on a couple of points where you can go out and try and find different talent and actually bring them in. A really good one is people who are currently working at your place with their previous colleagues. Number four is the first of four interviews that we talked about. So I call this one the knockout interview. And I suggest that people just do it via email. And it's really just a couple of specific questions to weed out. What I found in my experience is people don't actually respond to this email because they already think it's too laborious, which is awesome because I don't want them in the team. It usually takes about 15 minutes. Then the next one is extremely important, where you go and give them a phone call and do a bit of a screening interview. Again, 15 minutes, just getting to know that they're a real individual, that they're not someone who can't really articulate their points and things like that. Brings us to the third one, which is what we can call the top grading interview, which we're really starting to understand what were their accountabilities before, what are some accomplishments, how'd they rate themselves in the previous work employments, and basically why did they leave. Then it moves us on to sort of the fourth, and it kind of blends into what we were talking about, Paul, where I'll call this the scorecard interview, which really makes sure that they can do the job. Right, so if we're bringing them on to make sure they can manage our accounts or drop our expenses by 5% and things like that, we need to actually talk to them about how they've done that in the past. And I think this is a perfect time to really blend it in with that cultural conversation you were talking about, whether or not they're passionate and positive, right? So do they love the work, or are they actually going to bring some negative vibes in? Number eight, we obviously want to call their references and then give them a hire if they're any good. And you can also put in another step there of getting yourself to review it if your team's interviewing and things like that. But for us out there, that might, we might be doing all the hiring. We might just do that ourselves. And I think number nine was the final critical one that you've referenced. I don't actually think it's in top grading at all, is basically review people during their probation and seriously just fire them if needed. Never just let them lay around and sit there absorbing all of the passion, all of the positivity out of every other person. I've had a couple of bad apples in my companies in the past, and I tell you what, they do a lot more damage than you understand from a cultural perspective, but also from a motivation of all other employees. I've had one employee go and impact seven people before. How'd I go, Paul?
I think it's good, man. I love it. You know, there's a 10th thing that I just want to add really quick, because we talked about bringing people in, but not necessarily about how you look at your existing people to find the bottom 10% that also need to go, that create the jobs that you need to recruit for. And one of the things that has been very powerful is if you imagine a spreadsheet with all your people's names down it, imagine the rows that you're going to put a plus or a minus or a combination. And what you're doing is you're looking at whether they get the job that they're in. Do they get it? Do they understand it? The other one is, do they want it, right? Or are they bored? And so there's get it, want it, and then the other one is, can they do it? Many times you have somebody that understands it, and they also obviously want the job, but they don't have the skill set to do it. And then the last few grows are your core values. If you go through that exercise, anybody that has at least a negative or more than a negative, more than one in there, those are people that are candidates to be replaced. So I'll leave it at that, because I know we're at the end of this, but I would create that spreadsheet for your employees, and then you're going to find out whether you have the right people in the job or not.
I love that. And to download all the amazing examples, the Broom frameworks and wrap-up points from this episode, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/050 for episode 50.
That's right. Don't forget to download all of the points today so that you can print off the worksheet and ultimately hire the key people for your business.
Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Can you tell us where we can go to find out a little bit more, probably about Epics Worldwide, anything that you're working on? Tell us a little bit about the platform and about the adventures that you go on. I know that you've got everyone from astronauts to billionaires in this club. You're going to Mount Everest, you're flying in fighter jets. Take us through that and share that passion with us.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, one of the new ventures, it's at epicsworldwide.com. It's for entrepreneurs that are all working hard, many of them still building their business, but it's basically experiential networking. I think we spoke early that, you know, a lot of our best friends and our most valuable business contacts have come because we've gone to experience something together with them. So I built a bunch of software that helps connect people based on their business need and who's got the expertise. There's a place where people are creating 8-minute videos that are CEO to CEO teaching, something very valuable that will affect their business. And then, of course, all of that business acceleration leads to these potential experiences that this planet has to offer. And everybody who's a member goes and touches what they are interested in. And when enough people cross the threshold, we take that group of people and they go bond on the side of Mount Everest, or I just got back from Iceland and the week before we were crossing the Sahara Desert. So these experiences drive business success, but it also makes sure that we're all not sitting there working so hard that life passes us by.
Fantastic. A man after my own heart. We'll put all those links in the show notes, and I assume it's epxworldwide.com, correct?
Yeah, you got it.
Beautiful. All that in the show notes for people playing along at home. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit Group and join in the conversation with us there.
Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click the subscribe button, and give us a review of exactly what you've taken away from this episode or others.
That's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, the same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch you later, guys.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit Podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.